This week's episode of The Unwind is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to thecommentist.com and clicking on the banner.
Everybody see the leprechaun, say yeah. I just want to know where the gold at. Could be a crackhead that got hold of the wrong stuff.
What up, nerds? Welcome to episode 58 of The Unwind, a weekly show where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
I am Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills. So recently, I bought an iPad Pro.
Ooh.
I got the 128 model, no LTE in there. And so Rob's actually accompanied me on part of this quest. I've been trying to get some of the accessories to it, right?
Actually, every time I've gone with you, you don't get anything. Yeah. You should probably just not bring me places. Yeah.
Curiously, Rob always brings a sledgehammer whenever he goes to the Apple store.
Well, once I get all the accessories...
The crucifix. And
once I get all the accessories, I think I'll go ahead and do this as an official topic. So that might be another 4 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of been a botched release as far as I'm concerned. I mean,
which is very unlike Apple. The way they've rolled this out is very unlike Apple.
Yeah, well, I got to imagine...
Especially because Tim Cook is the CEO. Supply chain is the thing.
I got to imagine that, you know, they had the device ready. They had the iPad ready. And some of the accessories were held up, and they just said, you know, screw it, let's just move forward and go with it. So, still trying to get the Apple Pencil, and the other weird thing is, every time I go into the Apple Store, so I've done this three times now, and they said, oh, well, you should just order it online. That's the fastest way to get it. And so far, I purchased my iPad Pro in the store by just walking in, and they said, oh yeah, we've got that in stock. And
not when I was with you.
No, not when I was with you. And then today, literally, so I ordered the keyboard and the pencil online, and I think the ship dates are December 7th and December 12th. And we walked, Rob and I walked into the store today, and we asked if they had the keyboards, and he's like, oh yeah, and they're in the back corner. And they were gone. And then I asked another guy, and he's like, oh, let me check in the back. And he's like, literally, we just sold it, the last one we had about 10 minutes ago.
You know,
but
it
just
like?
Goes to say that, like, you can actually go into the store and buy these. So you shouldn't just rely on that four-week ship date.
People are genius bar, they call them.
Yeah.
It's like about as knowledgeable as the Microsoft Store people.
Yeah, it's terrible all around.
Yeah. Well, I think that's just for all three of us. That's probably been our experience for the entirety of our lives, walking into technology purchases, right? You almost always know more than the guy you're buying from.
I know.
It's just, yeah.
Brush your shoulder off, man.
Yeah.
You bring in your own pencil. It's just a regular
so
pencil.
So how was your experience, like your first, I know we're going to probably do this as a full review topic later,
yeah.
But as far as your initial experiences?
It's definitely big. It's about as big as my MacBook Pro 13-inch.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it. It's very thin and light. You know, and we'll talk about this more, but the question is, who is this for?
Right.
And the answer is, it's for Josiah Hills.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly what I was thinking when I wrote all the
like, you know, once I get the pencil, I'm going to draw a lot on it, but I said, you know, I'm going to play some games on it. I'm going to do a lot more reading on it. I re-upped my subscription to Marvel Unlimited, so I've been reading comics every night before bed. That sort of thing.
So is there a benefit to having that much of a bigger screen for
For
the price difference?
Oh, for the... Well, I mean, the price... When you start throwing price in there, you know, it's... There is such a thing as an Apple tax. That still exists. And so it's expensive. Is it overpriced? I wouldn't say it's overpriced, but I think there is a premium on it, and it is expensive.
So
we'll go into more details later. Let's just save it.
Because
we already had this debate, and you know... Part of it is, yes, I agree. It's expensive.
How big are your pockets, and do they fit in them? You just have
they do not
one
fit
large
in
pocket.
Apple's actually working on a retail clothing line where it's just going to have massive pockets on the side where you just slide in.
This is like a kangaroo pocket in the middle of your shirt.
Just quick curiosity, though. How does it compare to the Surface Pro 3? I think the Surface Pro 4 is the same physical size of the 3. So what's the size comparison to that?
Surface Pro 4 has a smaller screen.
Oh, it's smaller. And
it's thicker.
But
too.
same. But it's still like the dimensions are the same in terms of like length and width. I mean,
wait, of they're 3 to 4?
3 to 4.
Oh, they're the same.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It's actually a little bit thinner because
you're saying comparing the iPad.
No.
Oh yeah,
the 3 to 4. IPad. The 4 is a little bit thinner, but it's more or less the same. And okay. I know they changed like the screen. Like the screen, there's less bezel. And then I think the actual screen itself is thinner, so you're supposed to be able to write closer to
lamination.
So, yeah, but more or less the same size.
Yeah,
cool.
So we'll do an in-depth review. And
just want to avoid my wrath.
No, you can talk shit about it all you want, and I'll talk shit about your shit Windows phone shit, when you get the shit.
Points right? for Josiah.
I'm gonna get a Nexus 9.
I mean, you're the one with the Apple iPhone. I don't
not
understand.
For long. It's because there hasn't been a Microsoft phone for 2 years.
Oh,
and that's going to change next week as soon as it comes out.
Yeah. Okay.
Of course, I said that last week. But
he's actually taking a poo on his iPhone just to prove how much he doesn't like them.
I'll just put the emoji repeatedly.
Yeah. The little smiling poo. All right, let's get into a real topic here. So I want to talk more about Heroes of the Storm. I've been talking on and off about this game for a little while now. And they just wrapped up BlizzCon a couple weeks ago, and so we're kind of out of the zone where I can have any spoilers. Hopefully, if you're going to watch the championship, you've watched it already. But there were some.
If you
really,
haven't, you should really watch it.
Yeah,
there's some really great matches. Yeah. I mean, obviously StarCraft II, and they did Hearthstone this year too. But I was mostly watching Heroes of the
World
Storm.
World of Warcraft too.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I didn't watch.
I didn't
what
watch
did
any
do
of that.
For World of Warcraft?
I think PvP. It's just team based.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, PvP.
But Heroes of the Storm. I think there were some amazing matches. I showed Rob one where everybody assumed it was the third game in the knockout. In the match play, and it really looked like this team was going to lose, and they turned it around.
Reversed it. Yeah.
So this is my understanding. I'm not an expert on MOBAs, but what I've heard, one big difference that's cool about Heroes is that change can happen. Whereas typically in Dota and League, after a little while, once one team gets momentum, it is extremely difficult to come back at that point.
Well, it's still a skill play to come back in Heroes, but the technical aspects of it allow for it to come back. Because
that's what I mean,
one thing they do is so when there's a big level discrepancy, the nature is the natural response is to just sit in your lane and soak or farm creeps or minions. And but if there's like a 2 or 3 level discrepancy and you actually kill a hero on the other team, you get more than your normal amount of experience. So you can if you can kill off one or two of the enemy heroes, and you can get right back in it, and that's actually what happened in that match.
That makes a huge difference
between
a good gank
DK. Yeah. So it was really cool. And then the same thing in the finals, the championship match went all 5 games, and there were just some amazing like composition. So that's the team players that you pick, right? And they do this they do a system where you ban. And then you pick, and then the other team bans and picks, and they kind of
ends up being 2 bans, I think.
Yeah, they alternate the picks, right? So it's
which makes sense.
So there's some strategy as to who you ban and who you pick, right? Because you can't double up on the picks, right? So if I pick a character, your team can't pick that same character. So picking the character is effectively the same as banning it for the other team. So it would just. There are some really cool compositions, like picking characters that you'd never see in tournament play. Like literally, they picked a character that nobody played in the championship series that took you to BlizzCon, and nobody played it until
who was that
match. It was Murky, one of the
so ridiculous.
Yeah,
they played that so ridiculous.
Yeah, and like they played they threw a strategy out there that nobody had seen in tournament play yet.
Yeah.
So it was nuts. And to do that, like when you're in the finals, it wasn't let's try this. It was like we've practiced the hell out of it, and we know it's going to win the game for us, and it did. So it was really nuts. It was really cool.
Yeah.
So, but also in that conference in the con, they mentioned several new things for the game. So I just want to go through some of them real quickly. And I know you guys aren't into it as much as I am.
We
but
still play it once in a while.
Yeah, you definitely play it. So I do want to get your take on it. So first one, we'll just go one by one. So first thing they added was, well, it hasn't come out yet, but they added a new game mode called Arena, where it's really just 5v5. There's no lanes or anything like that. Huh. You all start at, I think, level 10. So you start with your heroic ability or ultimate, depending on which game you're coming from. And but that's it. You don't like level up, so it's just kind of go for it.
5v5. How do you win that? What are the win conditions?
You just got to take everybody out. I think it's like last man standing.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yes. I feel like that's good practice too to learn how to play. I mean, it's a little bit different than playing the regular game because you don't have to deal with minions and things like that.
No, but it's good team composition practice and combos and things like that.
I think there might be like some map objectives or some obstacles and stuff.
But you're not
like
going
that.
To destroy the core, right?
No, no. Yeah, you have to kill each other. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it's funny because every once in a while, so they give you three players randomly, and then you pick one, and that's how you build your comp, right?
That's cool.
And so it forces you to play new characters, which I think is kind of neat.
Yeah, that would definitely incentivize. Like, because right now, I think there's one character that maybe two that I'll jump back and forth between. But for the most part, there's one character I play all the time, and there's very little incentive for me to try new characters.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I was thinking about that. One of the reasons I'm playing some of the same characters is because I want to get them to level 10 and get that master skin.
Right.
Yeah.
But. You know, I'm not paying for it, and I'm usually playing against the AI just because it's a little faster.
So your XP is
and
lower,
so, yeah, I get a lot less XP, so it's a really long grind. But I'm thinking I might just throw caution to the wind and just start choosing some random characters.
It's funny because Dave played it once, and he's like, oh, I got to buy all the skins.
Well, one thing I will say, one major difference, so I think for most people in the MOBA community, League and Dota are still more of the kings. And I think Heroes is growing, but I think it's a little less complex on purpose. But one thing I really like that Blizzard's clearly doing is they're trying to innovate in many ways. They're the only game that basically has very different maps. They're doing all these different modes. I mean, League, they change the items, they change balance, all kinds of things like that. They have great heroes and things like that. But it's still the same map done in the same way. They're not on purpose, they're not trying to make it different.
No, actually League has I think they're up to 5 different maps, and each map is effectively a different gameplay.
So League has a couple different game modes, and they're trying to do a different. I'm trying to renege on what I just said.
Well, I mean, clearly though, they're lagging behind behind Heroes if you want to compare it. So in that sense, I think you're close to the truth, right? Because Heroes, basically every map has its own objective.
Yeah.
And so it's effectively a different game condition, right? It really has a different strategy depending on what map you're on. And there are more than 5 maps. And like I said, League, after whatever, 9 years of being available, now has like 5 or 6 maps maybe.
I mean, I remember when we were playing, I mean, the only map change was based on what mode you played, if it's 3 versus 3 or 5 versus 5.
Yeah. So they have 3 versus 3, 5 versus 5, Dominion, which is kind of like an arena mode, and then they have one where it's just one lane and you all go up mid. And I think they added another one that I haven't played yet, because I haven't played League in probably 6 or 7 months now. But yeah, so Arena, new game mode on on Heroes. So that's pretty cool. New map was announced called Towers of Doom. And so that, so like.
What game is that from?
Towers of Doom?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I thought most of the maps are themed after.
Yeah, some
stuff,
of them are kind of, I mean, you can.
It sounds like
Warcraft. They're not technically from Warcraft or anything, but they're. You can say they're probably generic, like Warcraft stuff, like Dragonshire. I don't think there's any mention of a dragon knight or anything like that.
No, but the one where you go down into the caves looks very Diablo-esque, I think. Anyway, maybe not. Maybe I'm just making this up.
The mines.
The mines. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that's actually. That's not. I think that's kind of generic Warcraft as well. They do have some, like the Eternals, the angel versus the demon in the center, and the towers with the Punishers.
Yeah, that sounds.
Those are straight from Diablo.
Diablo, yeah.
And so everybody's kind of waiting for them to do a StarCraft theme map, but they haven't done that yet. So.
Yeah, there's no space maps.
Yeah, but that'll be pretty cool when that happens. I'm pretty sure they will do that. But this new map, Towers of Doom, it's kind of different. So again, I haven't played it yet. It hasn't been released to the general public. But the idea is, so instead of destroying towers, you go and attack these towns and you capture the town. And then there's a timer. And when the timer goes off, you have to kind of activate the towns. And if you've captured the town and activate them, they have a healing fountain and towers that start attacking the core.
That's cool.
And I think on that map, they were saying that you can't actually directly attack the core.
You have to do it through
the towers. You have to do it through the town. So it's going to be like crazy team fights to keep those towns and activate the switch. So I think it's two things. One, you have to take the towns. And then let's say if you don't have the towns, you can try to keep the team from activating the switch. So it's kind of nutty, but people who've played it, they said it's one of their favorites as far as forcing good team matches. Like the other ones that force good team battles are the Curse Hollow, where you have to go get the tribute, and you know everybody's going to the tribute, or the Towers one, the Diablo one with the Punishers, where you have to activate the towers and you know everybody's going there.
So how does this factor into esports, though? Because, you know, esports, typically they settle on a mode and you play a tournament in that mode. These maps are all so different. Do they choose?
So in the tournaments, they either do it random or they like, it's like...
You so get, you got to be ready for everyone.
Yeah, so it's either you get first pick and I pick the map.
Or, oh, okay. You know, okay.
Like Magic, the Gathering, you can say draw first or play first.
I want to get those doubloons.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Doubloons.
So you definitely see, in tournament play, you definitely see some maps get played a lot more than others, and that affects your composition, right? Because you know, like,
certain
characters and heroes are going
to
be much better. So I'll talk about the last new thing, and then we'll maybe talk a little bit about esports in general. So the last new thing that I want to mention is they mentioned three new characters, but I'll just talk about one to save time. And that's Cho'Gall, and that's the one that's
so
out.
Cool.
He came out Wednesday of this week.
The rollout that they're doing is cool. You should mention that too.
Yeah, it's really neat. And so Cho'Gall is he's the one of the two-headed ogres from Warcraft, and you play the character with two people.
Yeah.
What?
So one person is in charge of moving him and doing the regular attacks. And then the other person is in charge of some of his special abilities.
So you do lose.
How is this not terrible?
You lose a character, though, on your team.
Yeah, so there's one other character, Abathur, which is from StarCraft, who is kind of like that because you don't attack people with Abathur. What you can do is put a hat, they call it a hat, a power, on somebody else on your team.
Yeah.
And they can. They then get either extra attacks or it makes a clone of them with a timer. So you're never really in lane with Abathur, so you kind of lose a character. Cho'Gall, I gotta imagine he's got crazy hit points or something to make up for it.
Because he's still
in theory, maybe he can solo a lane and soak. But it's pretty cool. And so the other really interesting thing they're doing is. Not only do you have to play it with two characters, but you can't actually buy this character. So all the characters are like you can buy them with gold or you can buy them with cash. This one, allegedly, so they're giving him free to people who went to BlizzCon or bought online tickets. And then they're just kind of randomly, almost like they do their beta testing, they're randomly seeding him with people. And so when you play him with somebody else who doesn't own him twice, that person will now own him.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's like spreading it.
Yeah.
So it's funny you bring this up because this is the second thing with Legacy of the Void. They put out the Archon mode, which is similar. So this is StarCraft I'm talking about. Where you'll command one base with two people. So it's funny that they're putting out two things with this system of two people controlling one thing.
Somebody in the office is like, you know what would be really cool?
Let's just fuck with them.
So, I mean, it goes to your point, Sean. Good point, Sean.
Sean
gets a point.
I created an app to keep track of these.
All you Windows Phone users.
Yeah.
So this
or Windows
was,
users.
This was really the point that I wanted Windows to make 10. In the first place is that they're doing some really crazy things with MOBAs. You know, they're not even third to market. They're like fifth or sixth to market as far as MOBAs go, popular MOBAs. But I would say they're strongly in third place behind Dota and League of Legends.
Yeah.
They kind of leapfrog some of the other ones that are older and been out for a while. But they're really doing some cool, innovative things, I think.
And you know what's funny, just as a side note, I think the one thing that the leverage they had initially, I think is one thing that is proving to be unimportant to me. They had all the cool characters that you don't recognize. I don't care as much. I really like Blizzard characters. I didn't care that much to play as them.
Well, it's funny.
As much as I thought, personally.
It's a good point, Sean, because the one character I do play as, it's from World of Warcraft, and that's the one game out of all of the Blizzard games that I don't play.
Right? I play as a Demon Hunter. Granted, I did play a Demon Hunter in Diablo, but it's a more generic character. I almost want to play as the characters I want to play as, but then you have to like that. Like, I like Zeratul, but I don't like Melee. But that was one unique aspect that no other game MOBA had. They didn't have that cast of characters, but...
Yeah, But you're right. It doesn't affect me that much. I've played all the Blizzard games, but I don't really love their stories, and I never thought that the stories were great to begin with. So, you know, it wasn't a big draw for me. I do have a slight affinity for the monk from Diablo, Karazim, but I actually played the female version in Diablo, so I, you know, prefer...
It doesn't help.
Is that who you modeled your D&D character over? Karazim?
No, I always play monks. Yeah. Like even Neverwinter Nights, played a monk. Manchichi. Always Manchichi.
Well, either way,
sounds like a food.
In a way, I'm glad, because I think this kind of thing has forced them to innovate in different ways. And I think that was their plan from the beginning.
Yeah,
it's cool. I like that they're trying new things. Like, I think it's especially, and this is coming from somebody who doesn't play MOBAs a lot, but MOBAs to me seem like the exact same thing, regardless of what game you're playing. You know, it's 5v5, you have minions, you have lanes and stuff, and there's not much innovation beyond that. So granted, there are different modes and things.
Get ready
like
for
that,
the angry comments.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's true. They are pushing the limits. And they're doing it at a pretty good clip, because, you know, this game is barely a year old. If you start from the alpha.
Yeah.
Since it's been available to the general public, I think it's been in June, right?
Yeah.
Like June
something
or
like
May.
That, yeah.
So not even a full year.
I love Blizzard, man. I love what they do.
Yeah. They make very good products.
Yeah. Look at Hearthstone with like arena mode and
same thing with
Tavern Brawl too. It's just very different from traditional card games that you play.
Yep. Hearthstone is a little over a year old, but so it's really cool. And then the other thing, just very quickly, and we'll move on. They've got the Activision, but really Blizzard, has investing in a new esports league. And so you got to imagine it's going to be probably just their game. So it's going to be what? All the Blizzard games and Call of Duty or something like that, right? But they're coming out with they want to do three kind of big events, championship series, one in the spring, summer, and fall. And then it was unclear if the fall one is going to lead to a world championship at BlizzCon or something like that, but I'm all for it. I'm pretty excited, and it tells me I need to start looking out for the tournament in the spring.
It goes back to just saying we just need easier ways to find the big events and how to watch them, and this seems like an effort to do that.
And it's interesting. It's really different in a way when you consider, quote, traditional sports. I mean, there's just Major League Baseball. There are sub-leagues, but typically they're owned by Major League or they're connected. This is coming to a situation where there's MLG, there's some things that Blizzard puts on, there's stuff that Valve puts on.
Yeah, but all American sports were like that in the beginning, right? Because you had the American League and the National League in baseball until they joined, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if
AFC,
there's fragmentation.
NFC.
Yeah, so there's and like UFC, there was K1, there was
it might confuse
Japan
this
too.
Is these tournaments at the end of the day are just promotion material for their product. So these companies have reason not to combine everything, possibly, if they can promote it in the way they want to do it.
I think there are esports leagues that are not connected, though.
Yeah, like MLG.
MLG.
When I think of the international
Riot, all the big events system, now, but they have the money to put behind it now.
They
too.
Do, and so that's the whole, I mean, unless maybe MLG has the power, or not power, but they find a way to get everybody on board.
Yeah.
But as it stands right now, if it's each company making their own tournament, I can't see them. Because, I mean, you have to admit,
esports Olympics at some point.
Yeah.
Like, what's the event where you have like 10 different things?
Decathlon.
Where you have to play
StarCraft.
You have to play
to
an RTS, a MOBA, a first person shooter.
Yeah, and then FIFA. Like a cabinet arcade game like Pac-Man.
Yeah. Like crazy things.
Hello Kitty Island. they just throw that in there as and a wild card.
DDR.
Oh, man.
They're going to have a heart attack.
What I can't wait for is when, like, Omni Treadmill and Oculus become, like, household things, and you have tournaments of guys just, like, strapped in these ridiculous harnesses, like, running around and basically doing, like, Ender's Game style.
Yeah, events. That's going to be awful for a spectator sport, though.
Why? You're still watching them on screen.
Yeah, so but it won't be crowd VR. People
running in weird ways.
Why? You won't be able to watch it in VR.
No, I don't want to watch in VR. I just want to watch them play. I want to be in VR, run around.
But, I mean, I don't want to get into this topic, but there's always that idea. If VR is big enough, you'll have a VR headset so you can see them in VR.
Yeah, but
it'll be weird.
Go to the VR arena.
Going through their eyes. I'm going to throw
no,
up.
No.
I'll throw
no,
up
no,
twice
no,
as fast.
No. They'll make a virtual arena, man. And you'll have seats within the arena, and you'll actually watch the game played out, not watching them run. Running around in strapped suits.
Oh, imagine if you could get virtually into the head of StarCraft players with their APM just going back and forth and back. If you want to throw up, that would be
just have them wear a hat. Although I don't think they move their head that much, though.
Probably
need eye tracking.
I don't think they move their face that much because they always have the same face on.
All right, Sean.
So, since we were talking about Heroes of the Storm, that's obviously a free-to-play game, and I'm glad that you brought up Blizzard, because so recently Blizzard just put out Legacy of the Void. It's a final expansion in StarCraft. It sold pretty well. My understanding, I think, Rob, you're
saying
a million in one day,
which for
a million that, copies or a million must be
copies. Million copies yeah, in million one day, which for that type of game is very
is
good.
Huge. But one thing we're seeing that's interesting is typically for decades, games were always single purchase. Maybe they would come out with an expansion, but typically you buy the game for X amount of dollars, whatever, $40, $50, $60. Yep. That's the game you play. That's what it is. Games started changing a bit as they added DLC, which I
once
guess was
internet,
like the next
once
level
the internet
of expansion.
Became more like common, I think that's when DLC, because then you can download it. You don't have to buy another physical thing.
And then there
patches
were always
too.
Patches, yeah.
There were weird permutations. Like, things that used to be free aren't. Like, Call of Duty, the expansion, or the DLC is just new maps, which most games put out maps for free. But anyway, we started seeing this move away from this idea of a single game that you just purchase and more DLC. And then now we see microtransactions. And now a big moneymaker is free to play. So a couple months ago, Superdata, I don't know how accurate this is, but they put out a report.
They put out a
saying,
lot of reports, though.
Yeah.
So
I trust them. They're on the internet. So they were saying that Hearthstone makes $20 million a month.
Oof, wow.
So you're looking
at... And it's
at,
only been out for, what, a little over a year now?
A little
I
over
think?
A year.
And in a weird way, it's clearly very popular, but it's not a game you would expect to be as huge as it is.
No.
I don't even know... Well, I'm sure it's not cheap to make, but it's not like there's super high-quality graphics. They don't need all these... Well, they do need animators.
But I think it was a small team. Like, it was just almost like a 20%
they put out,
project.
Yeah, sorry, that was my point.
They put out a new set of cards and a new solo mission campaign every... few months, maybe.
I'm sure they've got more people on it now, but the original creation of the game was a passion project for a small team.
Yeah.
So you see something like Hearthstone making a lot of money. They're pushing Heroes of the Storm a lot. I assume that's making decent money. League of Legends is easily the biggest video game out completely. Dota is doing really, really well. These are all free-to-play games, and a lot of free-to-play MMOs are doing fairly well. So now you get to this point, you have these companies like Blizzard, like Valve, that are, have these incredibly successful free-to-play games. From a business standpoint, do you think there's any point in making these regular games that come out for console and basically you buy it once? I mean, the way they try to make money is adding DLC, but is there any point? Like, what's the point of Fallout and Metal Gear Solid?
Well, it's funny you point that out, but like, think about what are going to be the top games of the year. It's going to be Witcher. It's going to be Fallout.
And we should submit critically in terms of scores. Yeah.
But even, but it's not like these games don't make money and don't sell.
They do well.
And you also
but
don't,
in relative
you also don't need
Sean
a team.
Just said doo-doo.
It's a good point, Josiah. It's 2-2. The doo-doo in my head now.
So, yeah, I mean, the games that are going to be at the top of the list, these games make a lot of money.
It's not like they don't make money. And the other thing you need to consider is that these don't, like, aside from, you know, you make DLC, so you still have teams. I'm pretty sure once games, a lot of games release, they tend to let go. Like, you have a lot more part-time, or I guess project-based programmers working on games, whereas with a lot of the free-to-play games, you have to constantly make new things in order to have microtransactions work.
But one thing along with that, I think companies have gotten really good at this. They know what the hooks are, so they know it's kind of like skins. Candy Crush.
Well, it's more efficient because it is basically skins, or it's a new character, but you don't have to build a new engine every year, right? Like from
Fallout didn't buy a new engine. But, they have the same engine for years. But there are
different things with that. So yeah, maybe you didn't make a new engine, but one thing is, I would think it's a much bigger risk, particularly for single player games like this, where Fallout, you have a big story, you have a big hype around it. The question is, what if it turns out to be a bad game? With MOBAs and stuff, you have to get the balance right, but nobody really cares about the story. You need affable characters and things like that.
I'm
not saying it's super easy to be successful, but there are a lot of successful games.
All games are putting out patches now. Like, that's kind of a, you know, regardless of whether, I don't know, MOBAs to me require more frequent patches, I think, in my head than... you know, a story-based game. But I guess that's not necessarily true because there's patches all the time for Witcher and
I think the development is it's more streamlined and it's more predictable, right? It's like you're reading the data, the statistics on gameplay, who's being played, how many times does this guy get killed by this other person.
Exactly.
And you listen to the community feedback and you're saying, okay, this guy's OP, this guy's nerfed, whatever. And you figure it out. It's not like, why is this elevator not opening 20 minutes into the game? And, oh, it happens to be because he placed the coffee cup on the table. And now he's, and this dog is clipping through a mountain and floating above him, right? Like, it's not that complex. Right. It's either, once the game works, it's, do we want to nerf or buff these people? And then make a new character, which is basically a new skin, but you're still... using powers that are able to be built in that engine.
I guess my point is, like, it's not like there's no market for games that are not free to play, right? And it's not like these games don't make a ridiculous amount of money.
But your point about the pay once games that are, you know, they're going to be the ones that win Game of the Year, I think that's a bias of the
press
games media, right? Because when a new character comes out for a MOBA, it barely gets mentioned.
Hearthstone was up there last year for Game of the Year for a lot of people. And obviously that's free to play. So yeah,
but it doesn't get treated like a new game. I mean, even with StarCraft 2, the expansion, it barely gets reviewed, right? We were waiting for reviews on that.
Yeah, so the actual issue with that is that they didn't send out reviews. Oh, okay. So I don't
know. Which seems really weird. Yeah. I mean, it's Blizzard.
But, you know, it's...
But you're right. I mean, that didn't get nearly as much press as Fallout did. Well, I guess that's the same point, but...
But they... And, I mean, I think that one got a lot of press because the StarCraft expansions are really big. They're almost like games unto themselves. But just normal DLC, you know, it takes a while for it to get reviewed, and it's not a big front page review. So I think that's the bias of the games media, but... Go ahead.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, yeah, there clearly is still a market for these games. That's why they're selling. Fallout apparently is doing really well. But it's all in terms of relative terms. I mean, you look at the fact that some of the biggest companies are riding off the back of these MMOs or these free-to-play games. I mean, from a business standpoint, you think less and less. I think one thing I should say, no matter what, I don't think these... buy once games are going away because I think there are enough people in the industry that want to make these kind of games.
Yeah.
But the question is, how much less focus are they going to put on it? Because when you have a game that's making 20 million a month versus a game that might make 20 million, you know, so that's about 333,000 copies in a month if they were $60 each. That's a significant chunk of games.
How many copies?
300,000, let's just say. So that's in 1 month. So it's almost like they're selling 300,000 copies every single month continually.
Yeah.
And that's also assuming that Hearthstone isn't on the rise. So we're looking, and they've gotten better with DLC, but like I said, they're going to keep making these games. But when you're a company like Valve, when you're looking at your balance sheet, you're wondering, is there any point, or why should we spend a lot of resources?
Why should we make Half-Life?
Well, that's kind of a joke, but that's true. They can put it on the back burner. If they could make another Dota, I mean, it would be incredible for them. Yeah. This is what they did, and they have some of the top games in the App Store. They're all Candy Crushers. One of them is with, like, Starburst. And I'm not kidding. That's what they do. They have multiple ones with
Kim
different
Kardashian
types of candy.
The Kim Kardashian one that came out.
But
Kim Kardashian, but it's liquid jewel.
It wasn't that, but she had her.
But there are games like that. Fallout Shelter.
I mean, mobile was the big... Yeah, Fallout Shelter.
Yeah, Fallout Shelter is it did really well. I mean, if Fallout Shelter outdid Fallout 4, clearly you have more resources dedicated to Fallout 4, and it's more complicated. Development hell. You think about if you have some game with some master story, what if at the end you realize this doesn't make sense? These loopholes don't work. You won't have that with a MOBA. As long as the game works, it works. Yeah. The development situation is different.
But you already said it, Sean. I mean, there's going to be these pay-once games because people want to make them, and as long as you can become cover your costs and make a little bit of money, then I think that'll keep happening. You know, it's just like movies, right? Not everybody wants a big action-packed summer blockbuster. Sometimes you want an art house movie. Yeah. Sometimes you want an indie film and that sort of thing. So it might affect like AAA versions of pay-once games, right? So you might have more of these kind of like, what do they call it? Pillars of Exile.
Path of Exile.
Path of Exile.
Like Kickstarter not, games.
Divinity, you know, some of these, yeah, Kickstarter RPG games that aren't like CD Projekt Red and a AAA, you know, fully voiced type of
game. Yeah, but even
game.
that was a small, relatively small team that worked on Witcher 3, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
but
still
I mean,
a decent size. It's a couple hundred. Yeah.
But, I mean, they're very disciplined, and they had, I mean, it's not like they were doing anything terribly innovative with Witcher 3, not taking anything away from it, but I mean it's based on an international bestseller novel series, and it's the third game in a series that each game has sold more than the last one.
I guess
right. So it's not like they're taking big risks there, but
I think that's the key. It's how many companies can take these risks, and you'll see more consolidation. I mean,
yeah,
you look at Konami; they're focusing on pachinko in Japan, and yeah. They actually have a big headquarters in, or not the headquarters, but they have a big base in Las Vegas because they're focusing on that because they feel like they can make more money off that than Metal Gear Solid. And just as a fan of these type of games, and conversely, not a big fan of MOBAs and most free-to-plays. Not that I have anything particular against them, it's just I don't happen to be a fan of them. It's a little bit sad to see. I like to see these big games establish franchises. I love indie games, don't get me wrong, but I really hope there are more and more Fallouts, Metal Gear Solids, you know, Dark Souls. It is somewhat sad to see, but honestly, I see from a business standpoint, if I was a CEO, it's also the scale. I mean, the amount of money you can make from these games is radically larger than other games. It's not like it's a little bit more. Some of these games make significant.
Well, it's
more.
Interesting because
Destiny is a great
it's
an example.
It's a crossover between the two, right? Because they started with, you know, the buy once. I guess, you know, you have the DLC, so I guess you buy two or three times if you're May. But then you also have microtransactions that just got brought in that are purely cosmetic. Like you can't buy weapons and things like that or upgrades. But you can just do emotes. So like different dances and things like that. And maybe shaders. I don't know if that was another one. Different color schemes for your guys.
You're selling different dances, people.
Yeah.
What has come to the
but
game?
But it would be really interesting to see the stats behind how much money did that make versus just regular sales of the game itself.
Well, Bethesda was one of the first to do this on, with Oblivion, right?
Really?
Oh, horse armor?
Yeah, the fucking horse armor. $10 DLC horse armor. Like, really?
But now everything...
But they got burnt and went the opposite way, and I don't think they've really come back to it. I guess...
Yeah, Skyrim didn't do microtransactions. They did DLC, but I don't think they had microtransactions.
Yeah, they didn't do microtransactions.
Well, some of their DLC is like... It wasn't purely cosmetic.
Yeah,
no, what is
it? Not Hearthstone, but it was like Hearth something.
Yeah, it was just house building.
Yeah, that was a weird one. Yeah. But honestly, though, was it Dragonborn DLC? That was a solid piece of DLC. That was a lot of fun, and it was full.
I'm just trying to find the development team size of Dota 2. I can't find it just on a quick search.
I mean, I can't imagine it's
a closely guarded secret.
Yeah.
But I'd be curious if it's rivals the side of, say, their Project Red, which is like 200, right? And just to see...
It's three brothers and a monkey just banging away.
Dance, monkey, dance! That was good. That's a good impression.
Yeah. Born 1980, year of the monkey.
Nice.
It's not an impression. It's my real voice.
So you're just speaking human most of the time to fool us?
Yeah. This is my impression of a human.
He's making a monkey out of us.
All right, let's move on to the change-up, which is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to the Commentist website and clicking on the banner. So Josiah and I took a little field trip last week.
Field trip.
And it was not... We took a little detour for that field trip. And we...
Or sorry, paper bag lunch.
By chance, got to visit the Jim Henson puppet studio.
I wouldn't say by chance. It was plotting and,
it was part of
plotting
it.
And scheming.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we were like, oh, well, we could go to a talk about something sort of relevant to what we should be doing, or we can go to Jim Henson studio, and we're going to Jim Henson studio.
Yeah.
I'm a bad influence on Josiah.
I hope their bosses are not listening.
So we got to visit the studio. It was really cool. We got a tour. We got kind of like the history of Jim Henson and how he, like, they have their archives, so they had a bunch of sketches that he did early on for
They had a Jim Henson hologram that you could talk to.
That was pretty awesome. They also had some of the characters set up so you could take pictures with them. So they had the chair for the throne from Dark Crystal. They had Oscar the Grouch. They had Big Bird. They had this big blue thing from Russia Muppets, or Russia Sesame Street, rather.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. But anyway, so...
Is it still called Sesame Street there, or is it like, you know,
Mikhail? Vodka Street?
Yeah, I don't know. Let's go into as many Russian stereotypes as we have. Gorbachev.
Yeah, that's a minus point for Josiah, Russian.
All our Russian viewers are not happy with you.
In Russia. So, for the change of this week, I wanted to talk about what is your favorite Jim Henson studio creation? So whether it's a puppet, or they also have their creature shop, which is... The only way I could get my pick on here.
I'm going to say Jennifer Connelly in Labyrinth. So hot.
Wait a minute. How is that related to Jim Henson?
You didn't know this. She's a puppet.
She's just a really good... She's a puppet or a Muppet?
Oh, good point. It depends if you wear her or you just have a hand up it.
Oh,
careful, oh careful, negative careful, point. Careful. Negative point. So anyway... go ahead. I was going to say Beaker, but clearly Farscape is included in this, and I take every opportunity I can. So anyway.
Who's your favorite Farscape character?
Muppet.
Or creature?
Yeah.
So it's there was a few creatures in the first episode when they go down to this one planet that I think we've talked about this, I think on one of the earlier episodes. But
I curiously kept saying Manamana. I didn't know what it meant.
But they created like a dozen or two dozen creatures for this planet that just never came back in the series again.
They did that all the time.
It was amazing. It was incredible. Anyway, but I have to give a shout out to Rigel. I love him so much that I bought
a
real life-size version of Rigel, who's our
I don't know how to do his
studio
voice.
Mascot here. He farts helium.
Yes.
But he's fantastic. I love Rigel.
Yes.
You can guess mine.
The Swedish Chef.
The Swedish Chef is the best. He is so great.
Oh, we saw the Swedish Chef.
Yeah,
really?
And the chicken.
Yeah.
Oh,
they were in the studio.
Oh, he always gets away.
That's what I forgot to mention. So the cool thing was, you would think that there's like dozens of the main characters, like Bert and Ernie's and Elmo's and stuff that they use in production, right?
Yeah.
So it turns out that they have some internationally. But in the U.S. for Elmo, they have, I think, four. They have two that are just the regular puppets, and then they have...
I think you said up to nine.
But I think that included international shows, though.
Okay.
So I think, like, locally there was four. I think it was... You know how sometimes they do they sit on the ledge and their legs kind of kick up?
Yeah.
So they have the mechanical leg ones. They have one where you can control both arms, and then the two normal ones.
Hold on. They're not real?
Yes. They actually clone them. And there's four Elmos. No, so it was really interesting, though.
Yeah,
you
so
would think
like
they would just have like dozens, and they just swap them out.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah. Some of the less popular Muppets, like the Count, right? I mean, everybody loves the Count, but he's not high in demand, so he's not touring in Japan or anything, right?
One, two.
He counted very well.
Yes,
yeah.
But the Count that we saw was actually the original Count. They changed the stuffing over
That's
the years,
crazy.
But.
Yeah,
everything else was the
it's got
and
stains
he is
and everything.
The Count.
It's crazy.
It's the only
like you would
count.
Think that there'd be a high turnover rate in these puppets.
Saw Grover, that's my boy, Grover right there.
Bert and Ernie were there.
Bert and Ernie, the Bert and Ernie.
How is it not?
Saw
I don't know.
Oscar.
Dirty? Do they just
Oscar?
I guess they dry
I met
clean
Oscar.
It?
They clean
I
that
guess
shit.
To clean it.
I mean, yeah, but
Oscar's really not as grouchy outside of the neighborhood.
Yeah, he was smiling.
I think it was really the neighborhood he was in. Yeah, he was great.
Well, he's in a trash can. What do you expect? He's the poorest person on the
Also, Big Bird is tall as shit.
Yes. So my favorite...
He's actually a genetic mutation. We don't know how he got this tall. Birds are not supposed to look like this.
My favorite, it's really hard. I really liked Big Bird. Big Bird's awesome.
Snuffleupagus.
We saw Snuffy.
He was there.
Snuffy is
It takes
awesome.
Two people.
Oh,
two people.
Really?
Yeah, he's massive.
I would say I had a big, big crush on Kira, who is the Gelfling in Dark Crystal. And she has a special place in my heart, but I think Grover is my favorite of all time.
Grover.
Grover.
We did get to see Skeksis, right? That's how they're pronounced. Skeksis. We did get to see one of like the real one. Yeah, it's this like bird creature that they used in Dark Crystal.
I actually haven't seen Dark Crystal.
No, it's crazy because they ship these things around in these massive crates.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, it's really special. Like, it just happens to be here, like, on its way to wherever it was going. Oh, and so she opened the crate, and it was, like, this big,
terrifying,
huge bird. Yeah. Josiah ran away screaming.
I peed my pants a little.
Wait, can I say my close second? It's two of them.
Bert and Ernie?
Staller and Waldo.
Oh,
yes.
I will say, I saw a Bert and Ernie YouTube clip the other day, and it was a lot funnier than I expected.
They're hilarious.
The Beaker one where he photocopies himself.
Can we just talk
classic.
About how it's great the Muppets are? They're great. Just say they're great. They're so good.
Oh, Kermit. Okay, so let's move on. That was an awesome, like, really special event for us. So anyway, so last topic of the day. I am in the market for a camera, like a legitimate.
A legitimate
camera.
I
have very specific use cases. Like, I use my phone camera a lot, and like, obviously phone cameras have gotten really good, and the iPhone 6 camera is very good, and the 950 and Lumias have always been pretty top of the line as far as smartphone cameras go. So for most use cases, I'm fine with that. There are specific use cases, though. Actually, one specific use case. Like, I enjoy going to
Naked
cons.
Fireman calendar?
Yes. We're actually shooting the Unwind underwear calendar.
Yeah, if you guys want to pick it up on the site.
You actually have to pay for us not to ship it to you.
Going to make so much money. New mics for everyone.
That's right. We will randomly ship people. Moving on. So the case is, like, we've been going to a lot of conventions recently. We started with PAX, and then we started adding like the Hartford Comic Con, and now we want to start going to more like New York and Boston, and one day San Diego. We're talking about going to Gen Con this year, maybe doing a live show, which is very exciting.
Tokyo in 2 years. Saving money.
Yep. Last week of June. Next year.
I'm starting a Kickstarter for all those people that want to fund my trip to or GoFundMe.
So anyway, so I would love a camera. I really like watching cosplay videos that people put out where they just go and they either just take pictures or film them. I love the bokeh effect. Like the bokeh effect. Yeah. Like that drives me.
He likes flowers.
I do. It's just amazing. So what I really want to do is make those cosplay videos when we go to events and things like that, and I want to have the bokeh effect when I shoot people in their cosplays and stuff, and that's really the specific case. So I started looking up cameras. Obviously Black Friday's coming up, seems like a pretty good time to try to find a deal on something. I am helplessly lost when it comes to buying cameras. Like, I've had one of the point and shoots a while ago before smartphones were big, like the little Canon ones. But I don't know enough about cameras to know how do I get that effect, or for my specific use case, do I want something with interchangeable lenses, mirrorless or DSLR? There's so many freaking choices. So I decided to bring this to you guys, especially since Josiah is our resident photography expert, to see what you guys think. Or is it just me throwing money away? Because I should also say, like, my budget's around $500.
Yeah. So I've been looking it up, and I think you can get something decent for around $500. The way I would recommend two different options. One, kind of a prosumer level point and shoot, so like a super zoom, and those can go from anywhere from $300 to $800 depending on the features and stuff like that. But you can get like ridiculous zoom on these things. That to get something comparable the amount of zoom that you can get on these cameras on an interchangeable lens, you're talking about like a $2,500 lens, you know, to get like a 40x zoom or something like that, right? It depends, of course, but so there's some really cool stuff out there. The problem that you always have with a point and shoot though is that the sensor is going to be smaller, and so just by the nature of the sensor being smaller, you can't get as much light on it, meaning that it doesn't do low light vision as well, right? And it's going to be what they call noisy, so it's going to be a little grainy.
Yep.
And you can see that. I mean, that's always been the downfall of cell phone cameras, right, which have even a smaller sensor than a point and shoot. And so if you go interchangeable, I was telling Rob, and we were at a Best Buy earlier tonight, so he had a chance to see this for himself, but I have an interchangeable lens camera, but I specifically went with the Micro Four Thirds form factor. So that's made specifically by Olympus and Panasonic. And it's very similar to a DSLR, except it doesn't have a mirror in there. And so the mirror in a DSLR is kind of like a, what do you call it, like a periscope. It's like a little prism, triangular-shaped mirror that flips up and down so that when you look through the viewfinder, you're seeing exactly what's going on the sensor, which is actually, you know, an inch and a half to 2 inches below the viewfinder. But you're lining up your shot exactly because it's using this little periscope effect. And when you click it, that periscope mirror flips out of the way. Well, it takes up a lot of space, right? And that's why DSLRs are big. And there's just physically no way around it, mm-hmm. as long as you have a mirror in there. So so I went with the Micro Four Thirds form factor because I said, if the camera's too big, I'm never going to take it. Doesn't matter how awesome it is, I'm just not going to take it out for shooting. And so I've been really, really happy with the size of my camera and the capacity of my camera. But like we just said, if it's a smaller camera, it's got a smaller sensor, and it won't do as well as a full-frame camera in low-light vision. So some things to think about.
I will say, without a doubt, the quality of phone cameras have increased incredibly. It's amazing how good phone cameras are. But even for me, who I really don't know much about photography, I feel like just a, not a file in RAW, but just a RAW photo you take straight from a phone versus DSLR, I could pretty easily see the difference.
Oh, yeah.
And it's even just a regular, a decent one. So I think you will, even if a lot of people say the quality of a photo is more dependent on the photographer than the camera, which definitely has some truth to it, but I think even you would see the difference if you bought a high-quality camera. And I think, yes, there are some things you just can't do on phones that you're going to be easily able to do on these cameras, and I think they'll look really nice. I think you should do it as an investment for the commentators. but yeah, no, I really want to make it clear. I try to always do these comparisons in quality with everything. I like, you know, when HD first came out, I was like, can I really tell the difference between HD and a DVD? Now I wonder, 4K, is it that different? Music, you know, I can't tell the difference between a FLAC file and a 320 kilobit MP3. I will say I can pretty easily tell the difference between a DSLR picture or a mirrorless, and even these high-end, the iPhone 6S, the Galaxy Note has a really good camera. I can pretty quickly. And one thing is, on since phone cameras are so small, a really big element of how good the quality of an image is the software, because some cameras or some companies have software that's overly aggressive and they try to sharpen it too much and it makes it all noisy, but they're trying to make up for the deficiency they have in the light sensor.
Or the colors are saturated,
oversaturated. Well, yeah, that happens a lot too, because sometimes an oversaturated picture looks a little prettier, but it's clearly less accurate.
Yeah.
But
that's actually, I think, the iPhone cameras are often accused of being oversaturated.
That's the other thing we've been talking about for a while, is doing a phone shoot off and then taking that and comparing it to Josiah's real camera.
Or maybe your real camera.
Or maybe my future real camera. Yeah. Yes.
Because we can't use our eyeballs.
Yeah, because it would be, and I hope this is something we'll either put together in a video or just a post on, but actually, you know, doing a really good comparison between, you know, the top of the line iPhone. Hopefully you'll have the Xperia by then.
Yeah. So basically, I think what we're gonna set up, I think, and you know, we don't know when we're gonna do this, but probably fairly soon. I think we'll use the iPhone 6S, which is a really good camera. We're gonna use the Lumia 950, which is it's not out yet, but it's rumored to have a very good camera. And then I'm thinking of getting the Sony Xperia Z5, which isn't the best Android camera, but it's near the top and it's close enough. Mm-hmm. So we'll kind of see how it is. And I think it'll be interesting to see. And we'll see. I mean, this is going to be a blind test, so we're not going to know which one is which. So we'll see how different it is from the mirrorless or the DSLR or whatever you guys decide to get.
So do you think it's worth spending this much money for a specific use case? Or do you think once I have it, I'll be more likely to take it other places?
Yeah, so I got my camera. It's coming up on 3 years now. It'll be 3 years in, I think, January or February. I like bought it after Christmas a few years back. And since then, I've also bought a number of lenses. I've sold back a couple just because I had to figure out like what type of shooting I did and how good these lenses were, and reading the specs and like actually seeing with my own eyes what those mean. So overall, with the money I've, you know, the cash I got back from selling things back, and I've spent it, you know, I've spent over probably $2,000 over 3 years on my camera kit.
That's and significant.
It's a lot of money, and it's definitely, you know, I have no pretense to say that, yep, I'm going to sell photos and make this. No, it's a fucking hobby.
Yeah.
And do you want to spend like, you spent $600 on your consoles and games and controllers.
I probably easily spent $2,000, well over, probably twice that in the last 3 years.
Yeah. So I'm very happy with it. You know, I go out and take pictures maybe once a month in the summer months.
You do take very good pictures.
I take a lot more pictures in the summer just because it's easier
nature
to do.
You take a lot of nature and animals.
When we go out on trips and stuff like that, I take some pictures, and I'm really happy with it. And, you know, I'm not even, like, really pushing those pictures on social media that much. I might take a couple and post them out with friends and family.
The blood moon eclipse you had were really good.
Yeah. And so, you know, I really like it. And, you know, if you plan on going to these events like PAX and Comic-Con and stuff like that, I think you'll get a lot of enjoyment out of it. So if you can fit it into your budget, $500-$600, we'll find you a good camera. I've already got four candidates here.
Nice. Look at this, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you can do, because I mean, it sounds silly, but I like nice pictures. And
pictures.
So the other big barrier to entry is just that once you get to that kind of model, you have to know what you're doing. Like, it's not a matter of just putting on auto mode.
Well,
granted, there are a lot of resources online, but I think if I didn't have you as a resource on how to take good photos or videos, I think I'd be a lot more hesitant to invest this much in it.
Well, I can show you some of the technical aspects, some of the artistry and stuff like that. I'm still trying to learn and internalize and figure out what makes a good composition
of
a shot.
But even you explaining the bokeh effect, you know, you explaining that to me is a huge, like, obviously, like, that's the one effect I really want to nail down for the shots.
I can tell you what kind of equipment you need to buy and what kind of setting on that equipment you need to use to get those pictures.
See, we argue all the time. We actually love each other.
So stay tuned for our other camera shootout where Rob takes pictures. One set of pictures advised by Josiah, one set of pictures advised by me.
And see if you can tell the difference.
Put the contrast way up. This shutter speed is crazy. We need to...
You see Sean in a very seductive pose.
Sepia, sepia everything.
Sean Vandalay on the couch, on the pillow.
All right, so that is going to do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes and Stitcher. You can also find us on the YouTubes by searching for The Commentist. I put the in front of everything now.
I like the.
By search for The Commentist.
You're the opposite of Apple. It's just an F you to Apple who hates articles. You're just the everything.
You can find our new spinoff Dungeons & Dragons live show on our YouTube page, which we do once a month, give or take. So that's been a lot of fun. Please share us with your friends. Leave us some comments. You can submit questions and topics to us directly by going to theunwind.audio. Be sure to check out our other podcasts, such as Roll to Hit, our D&D podcast, one of two.
Dunda.
Yeah. And we'll see you next week. Shit.
Shitty shit shit.
Shit. Points for Josiah.
I just want to know where the pot of gold is.
Give me the gold.